It's coming up for 13 minutes after 8 o'clock. This is, of course, the Karima Brown Show. You are listening to 702. Now, Premier David Makura delivered his fifth political report at the Gauteng Provincial Legislature on Friday. Some of the key insights he mentioned was the importance of equal pay where women are concerned. The Premier also assured Gauteng residents that they will be fighting e-tolls. And, of course, this has been a major battle in the province. He also said that the attempts by the Electronic Toll Collection Company to suggest that the stopping of the e-tolls would have a negative impact on the economy was blackmail or amounted to blackmail, and that they have referred the matter to Parliament, or rather to the President, for a final determination on alternative options of settling the debt. Well, the Premier now joins me in the studio to reflect on some of the key issues he highlighted in his speech on Friday. And as we mentioned earlier, you are more than welcome to engage the Premier directly. Let me give out those numbers again. 011-883-0702. You can also SMS on 31702, and you can WhatsApp me with 072-702-1702. Premier Makura, thank you so very much for joining us in the studio and for taking time out to engage with Gautengers and 702 landers.
Good evening, Karima.
You know, one of the things that struck me about your report was the fact that how we understand Gauteng in demographic terms have changed, you know, dramatically.
Yes.
And it obviously impacted everything from service delivery to the plans that you have made. And you spoke, for example, about the fact that the province's population has almost doubled. That is from 7.8 million in 1996 to 14.7 million in 2018. One in every four people who live in South Africa lives in Gauteng.
Yes.
And then you said the provincial economy is more than four times what it was, from a GDP of 290 billion in 1996 to 1.5 trillion in 2018. Our provincial economy is the seventh largest economy on the Africa continent. And then you said the number of people employed in Gauteng has also doubled, and that is from 2.6 million in 1996 to 5.1 million in 2018. And you have created what you call 420,000 net jobs since 2014. Now, that is an incredibly important set of data, just from a planning point of view and from a delivery point of view.
Yes.
So the fact that one in four people live in Gauteng, we've got nine provinces in our country, what kind of political pressure does that put on the Gauteng government to plan, firstly, to cost and to deliver effective service delivery?
Once more, thank you very much, Karima, for the opportunity. Correctly speaking, the province we lead now is very different from what was the case in 1996. As you correctly said, in terms of the size of the population, the vastness of the infrastructure that we have now, as well as the size of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So this puts a great deal of pressure, yes, on government, from education to healthcare, but also even as the economy creates jobs, you have much more people who are looking for access to employment.
Mm-hmm.
So governing Gauteng is not like governing any other province. Mm-hmm. In every respect, we are a huge province, and what I can say is that there's all evidence that pointing to the fact that government here has been able to cope in a very big way with the pressure of this growth. This growth, if anyone who was here 30 years ago in Gauteng, who knew what in 1988 what this place looked like, this is a different place in every respect. But it does put a great deal of pressure. But what I say is that every piece of data shows that the quality of life, even in the midst of this huge migration, the quality of life has continued to improve. And on the other side as well, evidence from whether it's the Auditor General or many independent sources also show that The quality of governance has improved. There are major challenges. Of course, one of the big challenges is that even in this improvement in the quality of life, there are disparities, racial disparities, and also gender disparities. But overall, this province has been able to cope with the pressure that many, many other areas of government wouldn't be able to do what we have been able to do.
Of course, in order to cope, you require a certain agility, both from a policy perspective, but also from an implementation perspective.
Yes.
So, for example, you spoke about the fact that public education system has doubled from 1.2 million learners in 1994 to 2.4 million learners today. In the past 4 years, we have increased access to early childhood development more than four times, from 83,000 to 483,000. And then you said we've also invested significant resources in expanding access to education.
Yes.
But before we come to your successes and your failures, what do you think is the push factor? Why are people coming to this province thinking that they can make it here and not in the Northwest or in Limpopo or in Mpumalanga or in Cape Town?
Well, from a national planning point of view, I think we need to ensure that the whole of South Africa works, particularly the rural provinces are also centers where economies thrive. A significant investment in rural transformation of those provinces to make sure that the rural economies provide opportunities. People don't always have to think that the only place you can really earn a decent income and make a life out of your own life is in the cities. Of course, younger people everywhere in the world, cities are growing. Even in countries where the countryside, have been to China a lot of time, the Chinese invest a lot of infrastructure in the rural areas, but you still have younger people moving to cities. So in our case, I think we need this twin track approach. We need to ensure that we invest in we put significant infrastructure in the rural provinces and create sustainable development nodes. But we also need a sustainable approach to urban growth, urban development, so that we don't have the kind of explosive growth that we have here and people settling everywhere and informalization. Informalization is negative. It undermines development, planned development.
Now, for example, the Democratic Alliance has identified foreign undocumented African nationals as one of the key reasons why there's patchy development. They've come under criticism as being xenophobic. The mayor, in fact, has had to apologize on several occasions after his citizens' arrest and so on. The reality that South African feels that other people are taking their jobs is, of course, a very real issue for politicians and for political parties to deal with. What is the African National Congress's official policy toward Africans who are in the country, who are working here, who are making a contribution to the economy, who is creating jobs in many instances? And how sensitive a matter is this for you? Where does it feature in your ability to explain to the community what you can and can't do?
Well, Karima, I would like to start by saying that I think migration is a big issue today everywhere in the world. And it's a matter that politicians seize on. You have parties created out of just the hatred and mobilization against migrants. You have candidates popping up, some of them even getting elected as heads of state on the basis of mobilizing fear of the other.
Yes.
A fear of migrants and hatred of migrants because of the rise of what we would call a narrow nationalism or extreme nationalism. But when you have challenges in economies, in an economy, a global economy, any economy, people often look at what explanation they should find.
Yes. Who
should be blamed for that? We know that our country faces enormous challenges. We have an economy structurally that is very problematic. It hasn't grown in a way, at least in the last decade or so, it hasn't grown in the way it did in the earlier decade.
Mm-hmm.
But even in the earlier decade, it was that growth was not inclusive.
Yes.
It was problematic itself. So we have a huge challenge. And then we went through a period where things went wrong. And that's we must always say. So if we are to correct what went wrong,
yes,
things went wrong, then the spiral of corruption and mismanagement hit the roof. So when there are problems, yes, the citizens are bound in search of a better life, which they are entitled to, and it's post-apartheid, the dream every South African have is to live in a better country. So it's very easy to heap the blame on migrants. And firstly, let me say that the largest number of people who move into Gauteng are not foreign nationals.
They are from other parts of the country.
They are not international migrants. They are people, South Africans, who are moving from different parts of our country. Only 9% of the people who move into Gauteng are international migrants.
Mm.
So this notion that the biggest problem we have is this problem of foreigners is created by politicians for their own purpose.
Mm. And of course, this is a global phenomenon. This is something that we see happening in Europe. It's something that is happening on a scale in America.
In the Middle East as well.
Terrifying.
In the Americas.
Yes. The danger of trying to find scapegoats for government inefficiency in a country like ours that has deep racial fissures, where people are actually xenophobic. I mean, we've seen the pogroms in 28, and of course also where there's deep inequality. How does the African National Congress plan to explain the fact that only 9% of the people in Gauteng are actually foreign nationals? The rest are actually fellow South Africans that believe that they stand a better chance to make it here in Gauteng.
Yes, and as I explained this, Karima, that sometimes to create a sense that our biggest problem stems from the inflow of particularly African migrants, because there is a problem of the framing of this issue.
Yes.
It's not migrants from Europe who are not few. It's not even sometimes it's not even migrants from Asia who are caricatured as criminals.
Mm.
It is African migrants who are often seen in the light, projected in a very negative light.
Mm.
And as I say, that's prejudice. Space is just premised on prejudice. There are many African migrants who come into the South African economy, into Gauteng as entrepreneurs. They come here to set up businesses, like you have investors who come from anywhere else,
yes,
to create businesses that create employment.
Mm.
Of course, we also have specific pressures from certain parts of the SADC region. And Zimbabwe, because of the problems that country went through, so there was a big influx into our country of migrants from Zimbabwe because of the collapse, essentially. And where would they settle? A lot of them would also be settled in the informal settlements.
Mm-hmm.
They would be the same with Mozambique, parts of our the people from Swaziland, from Lesotho.
Mm.
And then we've got social problems like crime, which we're following up on this. I get reports often from the police that as they follow up on those committing particular types of crime, they would want to attribute that to foreign nationals of African origin. And I say that I think we need to treat criminals as criminals.
Mm.
Criminals need to be treated as criminals, regardless of the type of crime. Criminals must not be given a particular nationality to caricature them. And crime, it's a big issue.
Absolutely.
I certainly think that we need to confront crime as crime in its totality,
mm-hmm,
and deal with crime in the way that it must be dealt with. That's why I'm I'm one of those people who are very, very unhappy in the way that we are dealing with crime, as the state and the response from the police, because I think communities have done what they can.
This is what I was going to say. A few months ago, communities in the south of Johannesburg took to the streets because they were tired of gangsterism. They were tired of the fact that the communities were essentially ruled by gang lords, that there was unemployment, that there was no opportunities. And they were, of course, caricatured and seen only through the lens of race.
Yes.
Because most of these communities happen to be former colored communities. But we have the same protests around service deliveries in all communities.
Yes.
For example, in a place like Soweto, you will have informal settlements jumping up and people in homes who own property actually physically attacking those people because they worried that the property of their houses are going to come down. How are you going to get Gautengers to understand the need for social solidarity, that we need to put ourselves in each other's shoes and that we have to make tough trade-offs? So, you know, people who are legitimately worried about the value of their property needs to understand that there's some people that actually just need basic shelter and basic services and basic water. Communities that, for example, has a police captain or officer that doesn't speak the language in which they can, you know, offer their complaint. And those are things that are seen as racist. I mean, inequality has a very particular flavor in our province. You have the undertone of racism, the undertone of xenophobia, and othering communities. But the reality is that we don't have enough resources.
Yes, I think one of the things that when we look at Gauteng province, first we must appreciate that this is a province that has evolved out of migration.
Yes.
In the first instance.
Many people say it's not a home province. People are from other places.
The discovery of gold brought a lot of people. And there were migrants from all over Southern Africa. They are the ones who were mine workers here. They are the ones who built these cities, who built the highways. There were migrants from Europe.
Mm.
All over Europe, migrants who came here. So there were migrants from all over South Africa, from the countryside. And what we are is the most diverse, the most cosmopolitan, the most diverse part of South Africa.
Mm.
Now, that's a very, very positive thing. And that's that part of that I saw at the festival last night, at the Global Citizen Festival.
Mm.
I saw that beauty of seeing the South Africa.
Mm.
Now, to maintain that, we need to ensure that everybody enjoys a good quality of life. We shouldn't just be diverse and then there's huge inequality between amongst our people here, and that we are together in the stadium at a music festival. When people leave, others go to informal settlements,
yes,
and others go to proper homes.
Yeah.
So our ideal and what we have worked for in the report I gave on Friday, we demonstrate that since 1994, 1.2 million houses, government-subsidized houses, have been built all over Gauteng, providing significant, decent shelter to poor households.
Mm.
Who it's in this province when you see the impact of housing delivery, that the middle class, black and white, the level of ownership in the Quality of Life Survey report presented by the Gauteng City Region Observatory, the level of home ownership between the middle class, black and white, and poor people is almost at the same level,
yeah,
due to the impact of housing delivery. But I'm telling you, the backlog as I speak is still 1 million.
Okay,
even with that level of housing delivery. So housing delivery, and then there's basic access to basic services.
Premier, hold that
thought.
We've got to pay our bills. Of course, we will be coming back to you. And of course, we want Gautengers and 702 landers to call in. The number to dial 011-883-0702. On 702. It has just gone 25 minutes to 9 o'clock. We in conversation with the Gauteng Premier, Mr. David Makura, who delivered his political report last Friday to the legislature. And we, of course, have invited our Gauteng listeners and our 702 landers to engage directly with the Premier. And that's precisely what we're going to do now. So let's go straight to the lines. We've got Mandy from Q, who is on the line. Mandy, good evening. Welcome to the show. What is your question to the Premier?
It's not actually a question. It's a disappointment to the Premier, the way he addresses that the level of the living has improved. Mr. David Makura was born with us inside Alexander. He grew up with us inside Alexander. Today he's coming to 702 to say the level of living in South Africa has improved. Karima, on Saturday I was in Alexander inside the shacks of between corner 8 and London, between corner 8th Avenue and 3rd Avenue into London Road. Mm-hmm. My house is in Kew. And then I was born inside Alexander Clinic. I grew up at 3rd Avenue. I was shocked what I saw and how people are living. They don't have toilets. They don't have electricity. Yes, those people, they just put themselves there because those areas is the place where there were fence. And now David is coming and telling the whole world that the level of living has improved, while his own township, people in his own township where he was born and brought up, are suffering. They don't have water, they don't have toilets, they don't have electricity. The crime inside those shacks, kids are raped, I don't know for how long. People, they go to police stations, and there's a woman that I met there. She told me that. I said to her, why are you drinking while your child was raped? She said, I didn't even get counseling. I am so depressed. Mm. But today, I want to tell David Makura that he needs to stood up for where he was born. People have developed all their places. If you go to where Zuma used to live, you see what he did there.
All right, Mandy, we've got many questions and listeners to get through. Thank you for your contribution. We're going to get the Premier to answer your questions and also to make reflections on your observation in Alex. I'm going to take one more call, then I'm going to ask the Premier to answer the two calls together. The one person we have on the line is Rifilwe from Soweto, who wants to comment on the question of business. Rifilwe, good evening. Welcome to the show. What is your question to the Premier?
Oh, good evening, Karim, and good evening to Mr. Makura.
Good evening, Rifilwe.
Okay, cool. I'm currently running a small business here, which is Boroto Bakery, but the thing that I want to talk about, I'm happy with how the Gauteng Provincial Office, or particularly the government, is helping us, the small business, to grow.
Mm.
They are really contributing a lot. I don't want to their contribution because of their service, like Township Entrepreneur Award, Premier Service Excellence Award. So the GEP offices as well, they do help us, the youth a lot. So on that, I was trying to say maybe to Mr. Makura, they should invest more on those kind of services because of on nowadays, we can't guarantee ourselves with the qualification that you get from university degrees.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee of that you're going to succeed. So if they can put more emphasis and attention to small business, then the life of black people, particularly in the society, will change because of there are people who, like us, who are passionate with the small business that we're doing. So I'm happy with that service.
All right. Thank you, Rifilwe. Premier, let's start with Mandy from Alexandra that spoke about the fact that, the township is actually still quite poor, quite deprived. Lots of interventions have been made. She made the fact that the point that other leaders who come from other areas make sure that their areas are okay. I'm not so sure whether I'm comfortable with what she's saying, but what is your response to the essence of what she was raising, the fact that there are still not houses, there are still not proper services, and of course that people live in abject poverty?
Yes. Karima, I think firstly, let me thank Osmendi for calling in from Alexandra, and she says she lives in Kew, which is just across the road. Yes, I actually grew up in Alexandra. I wasn't born there. I was born in Limpopo, but I have family there. I have a huge family in Alexandra. It's still the place where I learned a lot, particularly about my introduction to the city was in Alexandra, including to politics. I used to walk from Alexandra to Sandton here, just across the Greyston road. Alexandra I want to agree with her. What's happening in Alexandra, it's something we really need to change. It represents a very stubborn and persistent phase of what shouldn't be. And one of the things that Memendi would know is that government had put lots of resources in trying to change Alexandra from what it is.
But
huge, you know, the Alexandra Urban Renewal Project is one of those projects where lots of resources. The face of the township hasn't changed.
But this is the thing. Are you getting bang for your buck? You've put resources in there. But like you say, the township looks the same. You know, when I came to Johannesburg over 27 years ago, I had to do research in Alexandra on the housing question. And people were still talking about insiders and outsiders.
Yes.
And the insiders were people who had lived in the township 10 years more, but everyone had lived there for 30 years.
Yes.
And of course, it has everything to do with the fact that Alexandra was always this place that was under threat of removal, so nothing was permanent there. We've been in power for, almost 24 years.
Yes.
Why can't we get it right?
Yeah, let me say that, you know, because Alexandra is also the reception area. I mean, that's why Mandela arrived there and Kotani arrived there. Many leaders who came to Johannesburg arrived in Alexandra. It still is the only township right close to an urban hub like Sandton. So what I want to say, Karima, is that instead of thinking that fix your home, I have similar places in Gauteng, like Everton, Bekkersdal, where the government has previously put in resources, but those places haven't changed.
Mm. And what is the reason for that?
And my approach is that often the urban renewal projects that would have been undertaken in certain areas and they didn't change the face of Gauteng, whereas other places across the province, you can see the real difference
Let's talk about the face of
governance,
the province.
Yes, it's governance issues.
Let's talk about the face of the province.
Yes.
As we know, there's a lot of people here. There's a lot of cars on the road. There's a lot of congestion.
Yes.
One of the most controversial things, and our listeners are queuing up, they want to know about the e-tolls, right?
Yeah.
When I spoke with you last, you said the Gauteng Provincial Conference had resolved that e-tolls must fall. And then, of course, you were involved in the march with other organizations. And people caricatured you, saying that you're marching against yourself. This is the ANC national government's policy. And how are you going to undo this policy? And more importantly, how is the e-tolls, the gantries going to pay for themselves? Can you explain to Gauteng residents, not what your position on e-tolls is, how are you going to change government policy on this matter?
Yes, but can I just conclude on this issue of Alexandra and such older townships first to say I haven't given up. So I know my predecessors, those who came before I became premier, did a lot. Some of these things didn't work well.
Mm.
I want to say to Osmendi that we have a project currently that we have a huge piece of land in Alex. And I know I drove past there and then it was being illegally occupied. We're still pursuing a dream of an Alexandra that will be completely transformed.
Mm-hmm.
So that people there in Alexandra could also see that they have tasted, post-apartheid South Africa. Mm-hmm. And as I say, it's not just Alexandra because I grew up there, but many similar older townships in Gauteng, which brings me to the issue of
e-tolls.
But Refilwe says something about the small business.
Mm.
I think that our investment in the township economy is legendary. It's well known. The work we are doing there, it's far-reaching, it is unprecedented, but we want to do more in the township
I'm
economy.
I'm going to come to that because Professor Ben Turok, an ANC stalwart, actually critiqued the ANC's economic policy for doing too little in the township. Yes. So, but we'll come to that.
We'll come
let's,
to that.
Let's deal with the ETOLs, yes.
You know, Karima, that, you know, so let me first say that investment in infrastructure is always something important. And in this province, one of the areas where citizens say that infrastructure, you have done a good job in infrastructure, is investing in infrastructure. Of course, the roads are part of that.
Yes.
Apart from those that are currently e-tolled roads, we have invested hugely in improving the roads, the quality of roads. So the problem, often people think that, but if those who argue for e-tolls say, if it wasn't for e-tolls, the roads would not be in a good stead. And I say that's wrong. That's a wrong argument. Some of our roads that are not tolled, like the N14 driving from Tshwane to Mogale City, we are upgrading that road right now, and it looks very good. It's not the only one. There are major upgrades we are doing. They are not e-tolled roads, so they are not being financed through this mechanism called e-tolling, which is overtaxing basically citizens.
Let's return to the kernel of the matter,
the policy issue.
How are you going to get central government to change this policy?
Well, I am very convinced after engaging with President Cyril Ramaphosa, Karima, I'm very convinced that we are close to the solution on this matter of e-tolls. The critical issue is to ensure that there is an alternative, different way of settling the debt. Yes, we have a debt incurred out of these roads. We love these roads. These are our roads, and we must continue to invest in public transport infrastructure. But that debt can be paid for differently instead of overtaxing. So currently, this matter is with the president looking at various options, and the president knows from where we sit in Gauteng, the people of Gauteng, the ANC in Gauteng says the e-tolls have no future. We need to look at how we settle the debt, but also find other ways of continuing to invest in public transport system. I am convinced that there will be a solution.
A solution that soon means no e-tolls.
A solution that lifts the burden of payment on the motorists, many of whom are already overburdened with many, many other things.
Premier, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk specifically about township economies and the economic plan for Gauteng to create jobs, to deal with inequality, and of course also poverty.
On 702.
It's coming up for 10 to 9. This is the Karima Brown Show, and you are listening to 702. I'm in conversation with the Premier of Gauteng on his political report delivered to the legislature. And we're looking, of course, at the challenges of governance in this province and also the importance of growing the economy. Premier, you said 4 in every of every South Africans live here. People see this as an economic powerhouse. It is the economic power. Certainly, it's seen as the gateway to the continent. But there has been criticism from even within your own ranks that your priorities have been wrong, that your priorities has been on just catering for the middle classes. And even there, in a patchy way, we still don't have an affordable public transport system. We have a state-of-the-art Gautrain that is used a lot. But that disparity, Professor Turok made a very important point. He said, Rwanda, a country that went through genocide, that is, you know, was in a terrible, terrible situation, doesn't have corrugated iron roofs and homes that people live in. People live in brick shelters, right? And he was trying to say that the key issue is to invest in the townships, to not build more malls, build more golf estates, but to actually invest in townships. You will create jobs, you will create infrastructure, you will create a momentum, but more importantly, you will create a sense of hope for people. In terms of your report, you say prior to 2014, the provincial government was only supporting 800 township enterprises through buying goods and services worth 600 million. This has now now drastically over the past 4.5 years changed. The provincial government now spends 23% of its budget for goods and services on procurement, from 4,500 township businesses to the value of 21 billion. But many people say one has to be ANC connected in order to be, you know, one of these township businesses.
No, that's not my experience, Karima. I think one of the critical shifts that we needed to make is to focus on transformation of the economy by just thinking in the old left sense of you want to capture the commanding heights, in other words, huge corporations,
your banks, your financial institutions. You know, that's that
model. And that's why you have had a BEE model, which focuses on bringing in black people one by one into those.
And they're not really involved in the productive sectors of the economy anyway.
And you know, people often, after some time, they get bought out, and then these businesses remain the same again. So we said we need a grassroots-driven, broad-based economic transformation. And then we said that where are black entrepreneurs concentrated? People who know how to run a business, how to start a business, men and women. Largely, a lot of them is women who are making ends meet, who are selling in the townships to educate their children, to put bread on the table. The largest concentration, we in Gauteng, we have about 80,000 entrepreneurs, 80,000 people in the townships who are operating one type of business or the other. So in 2014...
And what support do you actually give them?
So we in 2014, let me just explain that we took an effort to meet with all of them across every township in Gauteng to understand their needs, to understand what type of support they need. And then we developed what is called the Township Economy Revitalization Strategy. So what does it have? It has got several pillars. One of them is infrastructure. Township businesses will not thrive unless there's infrastructure, good infrastructure in the townships, including industrial parks. We have gone into the townships over the last 4.5 years to rehabilitate the industrial parks. So some of these parks had run, they've been vandalized, we had rehabilitated them, we had brought in businesses to come back and operate, connect electricity, water, but we also brought in broadband so that they are modernized. People feel they can do business in those areas. Infrastructure is important. Secondly, access to markets. Most of the complaints around township businesses is that because of where they are located.
Yeah.
And we said government, the Gauteng government, will be amongst those that will buy from you. Ensure you produce goods and services of good quality. And that's where we spent the 21 billion rands. And thirdly, there's non-financial support. We help them, these businesses, through a program called Kondisi Shishini Laku to register properly, to also comply with the tax authorities, to register, to be on the database of government. We also link them up with other big corporates that do business with the Gauteng provincial government. Because we have come to know what they do, and they do very well, we also become the ambassadors. You have this small business township.
I'm going to talk to you about whether there is a comprehensive database of which businesses exist where. But we've got a call on the line. I've got Taz from Mayfair. Good evening, Taz. Welcome to the program. What is your question to the Premier?
Good evening. Hi. Thank you for a wonderful show and for the opportunity. So this is my question. I live in a in Mayfair, which is very close to the town. And over the years, we've seen different population births and whatever the case is. But in terms of infrastructure, Mayfair pays you, it has gone from completely dead to worst. I mean, there is a museum that has opened up in Page View. And I promise you, Karima, there is nowhere you can take your international visitors to a museum. It's impossible because there is just rubbish everywhere. You feel scared to walk. Now, we're talking about infrastructure. So what is actually being done and how is the city actually educating people who come from different countries, living in places like Mayfair and that, where there is just plaza shops everywhere, there is illegal buildings everywhere and terrible infrastructure. So what exactly?
All right, Taz, we hear what you're saying. We're running out of time. Let me give the Premier an opportunity to respond. Premier?
Well, Taz, I was in Mayfair just last Saturday with Karima.
Yes.
We were attending
at a hotel that I never knew existed.
An event there. That's a new, that place, Karima, we were at this function of the Congress of Business and Economics, at which you were speaking there, I was also speaking, was in Mayfair. And there are a number of things. On the one hand, yes, Mayfair, it's the significant decline in the infrastructure there. I've actually seen articles written by Feriel Hafaji,
yes,
saying that the city of Johannesburg is letting the people of Mayfair down.
Mm.
That evening, Karima, I spoke to a lot of people there when we were done, and they were raising problems about neglect of infrastructure, illegal buildings, but also criminals basically who are harassing business people.
Mm.
Some of them in political regalia, criminals in political regalia who come in there and then they want to extort money and they threaten businesses. So I've sent a team from the Gauteng provincial government to meet with the business people in Mayfair. And there are certain things that provincial government can sort out, but there are also issues that can rubbish everywhere. That can only be sorted out by both the city and the residents of Mayfair, because that provincial government doesn't remove rubbish, except where a municipality has been taken or placed under administration.
Mm.
Illegal buildings is something that we see everywhere, because a decline of some of these areas where you have illegal buildings and lots of crime happening in there. I would like to say that we need to work with the residents of every part of Gauteng to fix their local areas. Yeah, but we need the municipality, we need the provincial government, we need the municipality. And that's why it's important that politics must not stand on the way of us working together.
Absolutely.
We who are government leaders must serve our communities.
Yes, and we know, of course, that the city is being run by a coalition under the leadership of the DA. And I think the point that you're making about serving the community instead of your own personal political party interest is really important. We've got to take a break right now. There is an SMS that I really want to read out. So please, Premier, if you can indulge me, just stay with us for a little while.
Karima Brown on 702. For the curious. On 92.7 and 106 FM.
It's just gone 6 minutes after 9 o'clock. Hello, good evening. Welcome if you've just joined us. This is the second hour of the Karima Brown Show. You're, of course, listening to 702. And as I was telling you in the first hour, we have breaking news. We know that two SABC board members have resigned. We are still trying to get clarity. It seems as if everyone's phone is off and no one wants to answer any questions. That is from the board members itself. I spoke with Matata Tsedu, who said he's got nothing to say on the matter. We must call the presidency. The presidency claims that they know nothing about the matter. They haven't responded. We've also called individual members whom we believe are involved somehow in the resignations. They have not responded either, but we can say with confirmation that two members of the board will definitely be stepping down. Well, we are also in conversation with the Gauteng Premier, Mr. David Makura. We're rounding our conversation off about his political report and some of the comments that you've made. And then we will be speaking with Professor James Grant. He's a law professor at Wits University on a really important issue. President Ramaphosa was given 90 days from August 13th to appoint a new NDPP. And we're going to be looking at the people who have been short listed, and the president, of course, is expected to make that announcement tomorrow at the union buildings.
702 SMS Karima on 31702.
It's just gone 8 minutes after 9 o'clock. Premier, let's just continue our conversation and round off. I've got an interesting SMS here from one listener who says that the reason why the Premier does not see change in Alexander is that they assign incompetent personnel to execute their projects. Until the South African Public Service see an importance of policy and project monitoring and evaluation, failure will prevail. Now, we know that infrastructure projects must be do two things. It must come in on time and it must come in on budget. What are the mechanisms that you put in place for those things to actually happen so that if there are red flags, you can see them coming?
Well, Karima, I think that that's absolutely correct. That I mean, one of the things we have been able to do in the last 4.5 years is to invest a lot of capacity in our Department of Infrastructure Development. Those projects that are delivered by the Gauteng Department of Infrastructure Development, there's been significant improvement, including with the use of technology to monitor projects, including where we have appointed private sector people. You have seen these guys use the drones every day, essentially, to monitor the project was at this stage, and the following day is at this stage. We have improved there. We have added a significant number of engineers. I know that the Gauteng Department of Infrastructure is one of those areas where we are improving.
In fact, I interviewed the MEC for Infrastructure recently.
MEC Mamabolo, yes.
Yes, on the new screening system to kind of deal with issues of corruption.
But we
also know, of course, that every system can be corrupted.
Yes.
The minute the system is worked out, there's someone who knows how to undercut it and how to undermine it. The thing that I'm very interested in is the way in which the tranches of cash is paid out for projects.
Yes.
So often, obviously, the terms of agreement that you sign is you give an initial amount and then there must be delivery and you pay as the project improve. Give us an example of the value chain, let's say, of a development. How does the Gauteng government assess whether people are able to deliver? And can you give examples in instances where the delivery was so putrid that you stopped the contract?
Well, I think this is very common in housing delivery, where we have a lot of problems. People get the contract and they don't deliver, or they take forever to deliver. It's been very common in housing delivery. Of course, I mean, one of the things I did in 2014 when I became premier, went to Hammanskraal, where we found that the project was taking much longer, costing much more. Housing delivery. I met with the contractor there in that place, gave the contractor, put the contractor on terms, and said essentially they were building 500 houses and said to them, we are coming back to this area in 3 months to come and evaluate, which is what we do quite a lot, Karima. What we call the resan is about going out. It's not government sitting in offices, going out there to check project and find where this is the stage where the project was last time. And you know what that has done? I mean, we put this contractor on terms. I came back there 3 months later. They were done with the 500 houses because we were saying to them, we fire you if these houses are not complete. You've got to justify why you must remain. And we're doing that in many areas. I go back all the time where we have seen this is where the project is. And then we come back and check. If we have to open a particular, say, a clinic by this time, for example, I went back, I went to Hammanskraal Kekana Gardens and said, by this time, this clinic must be done. The only reason that clinic couldn't be open was no longer the construction site, was just putting, but getting the furniture and employing the staff. Which is a different thing from from construction.
Absolutely, and a different thing from corruption as a reason why.
And corruption, I must say that this issue of corruption is something we are fighting to the nail in this province. We have modernized our system. We have put in technology to eliminate the human factor in many areas, but we have also instituted measures such as the open tender system, so that you don't have people cutting a deal in darkness Every tender must be scrutinized with a lot of, we shine the light on the tenders.
I wish, Premier, we're going to have to, and I wish you could have shone the light on the way in which the tenders were given to those 27 NGOs where the lives of so many people were lost in life, Isidimeni. That obviously
is a big mark
on your track record. And of course, it is.
And I think
it's something that you need to
The Special Investigation Unit is busy with the investigation on how those NGOs were brought in. They were not supposed to be NGOs brought in on that. The department has said they were moving the patients to public facilities.
Okay, Premier, this is where we have to end. Thank you so very much for your time and, of course, also for engaging our listeners on these matters. We are hoping to do this more regularly, not just with you, but also leaders of other parties. But you are effectively the first citizen of our province. And if we want to check where progress is at, you are, of course, the person that we need to speak to. Thank you very much for your time, Premier.
Thank you, Karima.